Welcome back, dear students. This is our second presentation, and we hope you have gone through that first presentation and now have it in your mind and the ideas of what aspects investments can have. And now in this presentation, we're going to focus in a little closer on the investment universe, the alternatives that we will discuss in this class. And these are the major alternatives. There are others, but these are the ones we're going to cover, because for the vast majority of people, these are the most important. Okay, now remember, this is an introduction to investments class, so all you need to know going forward is what is in these presentations. Okay, you might know a little bit more, a little bit less about the items that we're going to discuss, especially stocks. You've heard so much about those, but don't worry, just stick with us. We're going to pull away the layers one by one until we get to the core of what it is to be an investor. All right, stick with us. We're so proud of you. All right, so let's get started on slide number 15. Return, reward, we like to also say investment return. I mean, why are we investing, right? We want some kind of return on our investment. And it turns out that return is very straightforward to measure. There are two returns. There's the total dollar return, sometimes called the absolute dollar return. And this is the return on our investment measured in the dollars that account for all cash flows and capital gains or capital losses. But more importantly, we're interested in the percentage return, the total percent return, the return on an investment measured as a percentage that accounts for all cash flows and capital gains or losses. Now, why is that? Why are we more interested in the percentage return? Because this allows us to compare investment alternatives, especially over the long term. Because in any one year, some of your investments, you have no idea what you're going to return. Some you do. But over the long term is what we're interested in, because we're long-term prudent investors. Again, as we said in the first presentation, if you're trying to make a quick buck as a trader, as a speculator, we wish you a lot of luck, and we're going to help you a little bit, but not a whole lot, because I certainly can't do it. And yeah. Slide number 16. The other side of the coin is investment risk. Now, risk is difficult to measure. There are many ways, and all of them are imperfect. Right. There's, as we said in the previous presentation, I mean, risk to us means harm, means danger. In the investment world, means risk means not getting what you expected to get. And so we use this one popular measure. There are others, called standard deviation. Don't worry. Don't, it's not a statistics class. There's no standard deviation, probability, all that stuff. We don't have to deal with permutations and combinations and chi-squared and all that. If you ever took a stats class, don't, none of that. No, we just grab the information. It's done for us. We grab it off the internet or at the library. Standard deviation is a measures the volatility of an investment. In any given year, there's about a two-thirds chance that the return of an investment will be within one standard deviation of the historical average return. Huh? What does that mean? In other words, yeah, we say that a certain investment is going to give us 8% or 9%, but in any one year, that could be plus or minus 10%. It could be, you know, minus 2% up to plus 18%. And that's what the standard deviation measures. What's the probability that we're going to get somewhere between these two extremes? You know, we hope over the long term we're going to get 8%, but we don't know, and we don't know what next year is going to bring. And it turns out that the higher the standard deviation, the more volatile the investment, the greater the variance from the average annual return, the norm. So we're going to investigate standard deviation in detail later in this chapter and our next presentation. And again, don't fret. It's not statistics. We're not going to do, and we're just going to use the statistics that the investment world offers to us. And we're going to see that we can use these attributes, excuse me, to our advantage. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. If we're long-term, prudent-oriented investors, and we don't panic when the markets fall, because they're going to. We don't know when, but we know they're going to fall. History tells us that, and we need to be emotionally ready when it happens so that we don't panic. Yeah. Slide number 17. So here are the major investment alternatives that we will be dealing with for the remainder of the semester together, remainder of the class, if you're taking this class without going through the college. Equities. What a great name. It stocks. Common stocks. Oh my goodness. Why are they called common stocks? Relax. It's not important. I like the term businesses. You know, in fact, I remember Warren Buffett saying, forget about the stock market, forget about stocks, go out and buy a business. And what you're doing when you're buying stocks is you're buying a business. You are an equity partner. Yeah, you're a tiny little equity, but you're still participating in the success or lack thereof of the company that you buy. The next major category are bonds. Again, another dumb name, not James Bond or not Barry Bond. No, these are loans. Basically, they're like mortgages, you know, but not for you and me. They're for major companies or entities, governmental entities, such as states and local governments and the federal government. And we call these fixed income securities. And you're going to find out why. Because we know what our return is going to be. We pretty much sure. Unless we buy very, very risky bonds. And there are some risky bonds. Or a company just plain simple goes belly up. Then we're in trouble. But in general, most people pay their credit cards and their car loans and their mortgages. Every once in a while there's a kerfuffle. And the same thing is true with bonds. Most all bonds get paid. Now, short-term securities, short-term investments, short-term vehicles, often referred to as simply cash, are very important for us when we need the money in the short term. And we're going to spend some time at the end of this chapter, the last presentation, going through the short-term investments, getting them out of the way, because they're really pretty straightforward. Not spend too much time with them because they're just not that sophisticated. They're pretty straightforward, and they're only important to us when we need this money in the short term. Now, what we're going to find throughout the semester is that, you know, picking stocks ain't easy. Ask anybody who's tried it. And so what most of us working grunts wind up doing is when we need a car, we go to a car company. When we need shoes, we go to a shoe company. When we need investments, we go to an investment company, which, by the way, is the legal term for mutual funds. And what these people do for us is they invest on our behalf. Yeah, and some are very good and some are not so good. And there's 12,000 of the darn things out there, if you can believe that. Yeah, we're going to spend 2 weeks hammering away at mutual funds because for the vast majority of us folks, mutual funds are the way to invest. And by the end of this our journey together, you will know whether you want to put your money in the hands of the mutual fund managers or you want to invest on your own or a combination of the both. I'll tell you right straight up off the bat, folks, most of my wife's and my clients and my mother when she was alive and my mother-in-law when she was alive, we put them into mutual funds, good ones. And you're going to learn how to find good ones and identify ones that are not so good. Now, those are the main four. These are the ones we're going to concentrate on. There is a category called hybrid securities. And the options, the two major examples are preferred stocks and convertible stocks. And we're going to find that for the vast majority of us, no, these things are really not that important. They're a small part of the investment universe. But as investment gurus, you need to know they exist, if only to be able to explain to people that, no, you really don't want preferred stocks. You want common stocks. I know it doesn't sound very exciting, but common stocks are definitely more preferred than preferred stocks. And we're going to find out why. Now, there are some others that will spend a little bit of time at the end of the semester, physical assets such as gold and Beanie Babies and art and collectibles, and then real estate, which is a world unto itself. These are bona fide, which means real, alternatives. But for most of us, no. I mean, many of us are going to buy a home throughout our working careers. We hope to, we aspire to. And so we're going to have some real estate. But real estate is very tricky. I use that word tricky, which translates into it's a real pain in the... Now, the last category here are called derivatives. And derivatives, folks, are very dangerous. Stay away from these things. There are many flavors. The two main alternatives that we'll learn about in this chapter, and it's all you need to remember, are options and futures. And actually, they're called options contracts and futures contracts. And that's really hard to say, so most people just say options and futures. But they're not investments. In my humble opinion, they are speculations. And you know that means they are gambles. They are gambling. You're gambling with your money, and you might do well. Good luck. Yeah, I won. I got 100% in one day, and then I lost 100%, which means you started with $100, you got $200 in the second day, and you wind up with $0 this third day. Okay. So let's now take a quick look at each of these. I mean, we're going to go through these very quickly, folks. All you need to know for this chapter is in these slides, in this presentation. So equities, also called common stocks, they represent ownership. That's the word equity means ownership. Now, what do you get from your ownership? Well, you get optional payments from the earnings to shareholders called dividends. And this is something that people don't normally key on. They don't think about the dividends. But dividends don't lie, folks, as we'll find out. You can think of them like interest payments, but they're not. Legally, they're very different. And they look like interest payments because it's cash in your pocket. But they are taxed differently, and it's a very different world. Capital gains are what people mostly think about when they think about stock. You're going to buy the stock, it's going to go up. Well, maybe it could also go down. But if the company does well, and then the stock should follow along with the success of the company, or lack thereof, if it does poorly. And one thing we don't normally discuss when we discuss stocks is limited liability. When you're a business owner, a partnership, and the like, you and the business are one. So if the business incurs debts above and beyond the assets that are available to pay those debts, they're going to go after you. Not so with stocks. If the company goes bankrupt and owes quite a bit more than the assets that are available to pay those debts, they can't come after the stockholders and say, okay, come on, stockholders, pay us more money. It's called the corporate veil. And some people, some ex-presidents, have used this technique to hide assets and throw their debts away, get rid of their debts. And there's you'll learn about this in a business law class, an introduction to business class. There's a technique in the courts called piercing the corporate veil. So this person set up this corporation, not as a real corporation to make money. No, they did this so that they could hide these assets and get rid of these debts. It happens. It happens. Nothing's perfect. Now, how risky are stocks? Well, unless we know otherwise, we should just consider the stocks are high risk. Some are moderate risk. I don't really know how many are low risk. What we say is that stocks are volatile. That's a euphemism for, I lost a whole lot of money. When someone says, how's that stock you bought? Oh, it's been volatile. What does that mean? That means they bought it for $11.88 and sold it for 30 cents. Do you know anybody who's bought a stock for $11.88 and sold it for 30 cents? I do. I've known him all my life. He's kind of a goofy guy, teaches at Southwest. I was a really good company, folks. I mean, they were based here in San Diego, and they're going to make artificial blood. This was in the late 90s, and it was go, go, go. I mean, think about it. The blood banks are always asking for people to come and donate blood. I mean, think if we could just make it in the lab, we wouldn't have to worry. It didn't work out so well. This blood banks are still asking for money, and Alliance Pharmaceuticals is long gone. But if it would have succeeded, it's one of those stocks where what we say is a speculative stock. If it succeeds, oh boy, we're in the money. But that's what we're going to find that we in this class are going to concentrate on stocks that are boring, that are doing the same thing they've been doing for decades and paying dividends every year. And those are, in my humble opinion, should be the bulk of your investments, in my humble opinion, but everyone's different. But in general, stocks should be considered a long-term investment. Now let's take a look at the 2008 definition. Stocks are equity investment instruments designed to lose value. I love this quote. This is from A Random Walk Down Wall Street, one of the two books we're going to want you to read as your first book, after you've read our book, the textbook that accompanies this class. He actually, I'm paraphrasing because he used it a little differently, but it's a great quote. Ask people who bought in 2007 and 8 how their stocks did. Oh, they were volatile. Some of them lost 90%. Or ask people who bought during the internet craze in the late 90s, 1990s, folks. Yeah. Slide number 19, fixed income securities, bonds. Bonds, as we said, are loans. They are loans to corporations, major corporations, or state and local governments. The city of Chula Vista, the state of California, Southwestern Community College. As we said, we didn't have a bake sale to pay for that stadium, folks. A gorgeous stadium. No. We had to make loans, and we don't go to a bank or a credit union. We go to the investment community and say, hey, we're Walmart, or we're the state of California, or we're the federal government. Will you lend us money? And here are the terms. You're going to get so much interest, and we promise to repay the loan when the loan is over. And so investors go, sure, you know, what are we getting? What are we getting from this? Well, we know that we're going to get, you know, certain percentage, 5%, 7%, 3%, 2%. And we know that we're going to get, in most cases, our money back, in the vast majority of cases. And so that's why we call them fixed, because we know that they are going to pay this amount of money, and there's a very good probability that they will pay the money back. Now, do things ever go wrong? Yeah. In 2008, not only did stocks tank, but so did bonds, except for government bonds, treasury bonds. And so again, we'll paraphrase Professor Malkiel, Random Walk Down Wall Street. 2008 definition, where bonds are fixed rate investment instruments designed to lose value. Many bonds lost a ton of money, but most of them all came back when the economy came back over the next 4 to 5 years from 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Oh my goodness. Now, the next category that's very important, but pretty straightforward, and we'll just race through it. I've thought about making this its own chapter, but it's already boring enough. If it's a chapter by itself, people really won't look at it. But it's important, folks. It's very, very important. Cash, short-term instruments, short-term vehicles, short-term investments, normally up to a year or so. We talked about our time horizon in the first presentation. They're usually guaranteed or pretty darn close. We're going to take a look at one that is not guaranteed, but it might as well be, folks. Very, very low risk of losing your principal. Liquid. Many of them let you write a check, or nowadays just have you transfer the money from your account to your checking account. So, what do we know about risk versus reward? Do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? Well, these things, because they're going to help us sleep well, they're not going to help us eat well. They have a very low return, very low reward profile. Yeah. Over the long term, 1 to 3 to 5, sometimes percent or so. Right now, they're paying over 5%, which is pretty darn good. But, excuse me, before 2022, they were paying nothing since the Great Depression. I'm sorry, Great Recession, the global financial crisis of 2008 and 2009. They were paying 0.01%. And some companies were just, you know, and they were just lying, but they really weren't paying 0.01%. The company was dipping into their coffers to pay you 0.01%. So you felt like you were getting something. But the company was losing money on these things. So they were just paying you 0.01% to keep you in with their business. We say that these are a place to park your money. And we also use these for an emergency fund. You might have heard of the term emergency fund. It's something that's normally thrown into every personal financial planning class, such as ours, Principles of Financial Planning. So we'll take a quick look at it. It's something for very, very special, very important for some people who are in more seasonal jobs, or they get laid off often. Yeah. Now let's see the 2008 definition. Short-term investments are investments designed to accept what remains of investors' money after they've given up on stocks and bonds. Don't be one of these people, folks. Yeah, the market drops 70%. No, not 70. Let's say 40%. What do? They take their money out of stocks and put it into short-term investments. Wrong! This is the time when the stocks go on sale. You want to buy. No. People, emotions take over. People were not rational beings. We've known that for many years now. It's been proven over and over again. So we panic and at the worst possible time, take the money out of the stock market or maybe even the bond market, put it into short-term investments. Then the market invariably, unless the world ends, comes back and, you know, goes up 50%, and our hapless investor turns around, takes the money out of their short-term investment, puts it back in the market just in time for another 20%. Don't be one of these people. We're going to show you that the volatility, the times when the markets fall, are golden opportunities for us to buy more or just sit on our hands and not do anything and just wait for it to come back. Because if it doesn't come back, no, we don't want to think about that. No, it's going to. We have to have faith. I'm talking to myself here. You're going to realize these people. Folks, really, think about it. Folks, I'm going to tell you this again and again and again. If it really does collapse, if this technologically based civilization cracks, falls into a pool of tears, dissolves, evaporates, your stock portfolio is going to be the last thing you're interested in. Yeah, so no, we have to have faith that we as a human species are going to go forward with all the bumps and impediments along the way. I think so. And I'm old. Slide number 21. These are some of the examples that we will discuss in detail in our last presentation. Demand deposit accounts, you know, savings accounts, certificates of deposit, money market mutual funds, savings bonds, treasury bills, commercial paper. What a silly name. Corporate paper and bankers acceptance notes. What are these things? Well, yeah, later. Slide number 22. Mutual funds. Now, mutual funds, as we've already mentioned, are investments for the masses. I don't really like the name mutual fund. I understand why, you know, it's called mutual fund because we're investors in a mutual investment. But the legal term, I think, is much better. You need milk, you go to a dairy company, right? You need clothing, you go to a clothing company. You need investments, you go to an investment company. They pool the investors' money and invest in a diversified portfolio of securities. Now, what are the advantages of these things? Well, you get instant diversification. Your $50 buys 25 cents of Apple and 30 cents of Home Depot and 15 cents of ExxonMobil, whatever. You don't worry about that. That's the company's problem. And so you get this instant diversification, and we're going to find that some people are not really fans of diversification, but the vast majority of us should be. I certainly am. Diversification is good, but there are some more aggressive, speculative, trading individuals who believe that diversification just waters down your gains. It also waters down your losses. And that's what we're interested in. As Warren Buffett says, rule number one, don't lose money. Rule number two, never forget rule number one. well, we know we're going to lose money in the short term because markets bounce up and down. But over the long term, if we invest in companies that have been around for decades and have done well in good times and bad times, we should do well. No guarantees. Professional money management is the second major advantage of these. And again, there's some controversy here because some people believe that these people are goofballs. Well, you know, some of them aren't that great. But some of them are. Some of them have done well over decades, folks. So we just don't want to throw out everybody just because some mutual fund managers don't do well. And there's another, we're going to get into the idea of passive management. These are active managers in general, but there is passive management. We'll discuss that in detail when we get to chapter 2 on mutual funds. And we'll see that there's some controversy about the professional money management. They're very, very popular, folks. Oh, my goodness. Everybody who gets a job these days usually has some kind of employer-sponsored plan, such as a 401k or 403b or a simple IRA. And the investment vehicle of choice is going to be mutual funds. Now, some of them allow you to buy individual stocks and bonds and good luck. After you've taken this class, if you feel that you can choose your individual stocks and bonds, great. We want you to do well. We want you to become the best stock pickers the world has ever seen. But remember, it's not easy and it takes a lot of work. And the people who do the best, I find, are the people who just enjoy it. They really enjoy it. So you'll find out that by the end of our journey together. They range from very low-risk money market mutual funds to very speculative, aggressive growth funds that invest in high-flying stocks that should do well over the long term, but they're going to fall precipitously when the markets fall, so you have to be emotionally prepared. So let's take a look at the 2008 definition. Yeah, them too. Oh, sure, if you're investing in stocks and the stock market falls 50%, your investment's going to fall 50%, and that's what happened to many of the mutual fund companies. Now, some lost 70% and some lost 30%. And you might say, well, what's the big difference? You'll see. I like mutual funds that protect on the downside. When we get to the mutual fund chapter, chapter number 2, we're going to see the upside downside ratio. How well did they do when the market goes up? How badly did they do when the market goes down? Slide number 23. Now, this is a professionally done by Ferran Capo in Spain, actually. He took my class online, and he said, oh, Frank, this is great. Is there anything I can do for you? I said, yes, I'm terrible. I'm terrible with graphics. Where do you see my mutual fund graphic in chapter number 2? He said, I can do that for you, you know, as a way to repay me. So here we are. We're the little people, and we give our money to the mutual fund managers, the mutual fund, the investment company, and they turn around and they buy the stocks. They research the stocks. They knock on the doors of Ford and GM and Honda and Toyota and Tesla and decide which automobile companies are going to buy or not buy. They knock on the doors and decide which energy companies are going to buy. And if they buy bonds, that's called a stock mutual fund. That's pretty straightforward. If they buy the bonds, they have bond analysts that look at the creditworthiness of the bonds. It's called a bond mutual fund. And if they buy the short-term investments that we'll take a look at in the last presentation in chapter 1, that's called a money market mutual fund. But usually you don't hear people say money market mutual fund. They just say money market. Now, what we begin to see is the explosion of different types of mutual funds with the advent of balanced funds, mutual funds that invest in both stocks and bonds. And we're going to find that for many people, especially when you get old like me, balanced funds are an excellent choice. Really, really. You're not going to do as well over the long term, but you're also going to accept less volatility because bonds are less volatile than stocks. They still go up and down, but nowhere near as much as stocks. Cool? Do you like that graphic? Okay, so check him out. If you ever need graphics, he's a professional graphic artist in Spain. The English is perfect. Investors receive diversification and professional money management. So for the vast majority of us folks, mutual funds are just the way to go. But hopefully you're going to find that you're one of those people that enjoy doing the research of stocks, and you're not just going to buy a stock because some goofball on the television said, oh yeah, buy Apple. Okay, fine. No, you're going to dig deeply into the prospects of Apple and look at their competitors. Yeah, and then we're going to learn how to use some valuation techniques. And we're only going to learn how to use a few, folks, because there's dozens of them out there. But we're going to learn how to use these scant few over and over and over again. And then after the class is over, or during the class, you could say, Frank, what about this investment technique? I'm interested in this one. Or go to the appendix in the book and look at the one of the best ones that I found called the Stock Selection Guide, which is part of betterinvesting.org, and join an investment club and get immersed in the world of investments and buy your individual stocks and do better than the mutual fund managers. Or you're going to say, no, I'm not. I got a wife and a kid. I got a husband and kids, and I got my job, and I got the house to work on, and I love gardening, and you just don't want to spend the time doing that. And that's why mutual funds are so cool, folks. The problem is finding the right one or ones, or, and we're going to learn how to do that in chapter number 2, but it's a never-ending process. It's always, we're always reevaluating our investments, whether they be individual stocks and bonds or individual mutual funds. Cool. Slide number 24. Now, hybrid investments. You know, you have to know about these because you're going to be the investment guru for your friends, family, and colleagues, and so you can't let them down, especially when they say, well, don't I want preferred stocks? And you really going to tell them, no, you don't really want preferred stocks. They are more used by corporations. They are a hybrid. They're kind of like a stock and they're kind of like a bond. It's, in fact, some people call preferred stocks bonds, even though they're not legally bonds. Preferred stock represent ownership in a corporation, but in general, the dividends are not considered optional. In common stocks, even if a company's been paying you dividends for 60 years, they could stop next quarter. In the United States, they usually pay quarterly. And outside the United States, they pay semi-annually or yearly. But they, next time they're up to pay stock dividends, excuse me, if the next time they're up to pay dividends, they can just say, no, we're not going to do it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's perfectly legal. It's not something companies usually do. Once they start paying dividends, they want to continue paying dividends. But that's the thing about preferred stock. Normally, they're not considered optional. And there's something about preferred stocks that make them more attractive to other corporations. And we're going to deal with that much later on, which is why they're not that important to us, although some people like them. Convertible securities are bonds or preferred stocks that can be converted into common stocks. And doesn't that sound exciting? Kind of like a convertible car driving down the highway with the hair blowing through your wind, or the wind blowing through your hair, or whatever, I don't know, until you realize that this is a more expensive car to maintain. Yeah, no, convertible securities, again, they're for a small percentage of the population. They're designed to offer the stability of fixed income investments, bonds, with the opportunity for capital growth of equity investments, stocks. So in other words, these things are designed to be the best of both worlds. But the problem with that is when you get the advantages of both worlds, you also get the disadvantages of both worlds. So they're the best and the worst of both worlds. So yeah, for the vast majority of us, I'm going to tell you, in my humble opinion, they're just not that important. But you might decide that you want to dabble in these things. It's up to you. And as we said, some people categorize these with stocks, some categorize these with bonds, and so you decide. But in general, remember, preferred stock are stock. They represent ownership. Convertible bonds are bonds, and they don't represent ownership, but they may if you convert them into common stock. And so that sounds really exciting, but it's not really that exciting. In fact, when we get to chapter 10, the 5 points, the assignment of chapter 10 is the easiest 5 points you will do all semester long because the calculations are just kind of ridiculously simple. Check it out when we get there. Slide number 25. Other popular investment vehicles, real estate. We'll spend a little bit of time on real estate at the end of the semester, but folks, real estate is something that's very difficult to teach in a classroom. They teach you real estate And they teach you things that you'll never really have to ever have to deal with. You really got to get out there and do real estate. You have to do the nuts and bolts of whatever you're going to do in real estate, buying and maintaining and dealing with it. Some people like to flip real estate. Oh my goodness, good luck to them. If you really are interested in real estate, what I'm going to suggest is you get a job in the industry for a property manager, for an escrow company, for in a real estate brokerage company, title insurance, appraisers. You want to have a job where you are always working, become an appraiser. That's the way to learn the industry. If you don't want to get involved in the industry and want to be a landlord, there are these wonderful little things called real estate investment trusts. There are not that many of them. They look like stocks. You buy and sell them like stocks. They trade like stocks. But you're actually investing in real estate when you do that. So if you want to be a landlord without being a landlord, REITs, and I love that name, REITs, REITy-old, REITy-old, righty. REITs are one way to go. And when we learn how to evaluate stocks, we're basically learning how to evaluate real estate investment trusts. Now, precious metals, gold and the like, palladium, platinum, rhodium, silver, jewelry, no. Art, oh boy, buy art because you love it, not because you think it's going to go up. And all these collectibles, baseball cards and Beanie Babies. Cars, I know somebody who's done very, very well with cars, but he knows what he's doing. He's an engineer. He knows how to fix these things. He knows where to get the parts. Some of them are very, very rare and amazing, and he's done very well, but that's him, you know, not me. I mean, for me, a car is something that you buy that's going to depreciate, and you hope to get as many miles as you can economically and safely and reliably as you can. And then eventually, when the wheels fall off, you call up the recycling yard to come pick it up. Tax advantage investments. Oil, gas, limited partnership, low-income housing projects. These are real investments. But again, for the vast majority of us, they're just not that important. I mean, if you have so much money that you're trying to look for ways to sequester, you know, get rid of, not get rid of it, but just protect it, then God bless you, and I'm glad you're taking our course, but you probably have your own private broker. Yes, I don't know. Maybe it's up to you. We will look at some of, or all of these, especially real estate and tangible assets, towards the end of the semester. By the way, none of these were spared in 2008. I mean, folks, oil. And in summer of 2008, people were bothering me about the high cost of gasoline. Oil spiked at $147 a barrel, I think it was. Almost $150 a barrel. And by the next year, 2009, like February or so, it was $39 a barrel. Yeah. So none of these were spared in 2008 either. It was one of those, they call it the Black Swan event, yeah, where just everybody fall down. Slide number 26, derivatives. As we've said, many in the financial world, myself included, do not categorize these as investments. They are speculations. They are gambling. But because you're going to be an investment guru for your friends, family, and coworkers, you have to know what these things are, if only to get people to stay far away from them. They derive their value from an underlying security or asset. Huh? Yeah, they point to something else, and they follow what that something else does. Now, it could be a stock, it could be a bond, it could be another type of asset, it could be a commodity such as wheat or corn or oil, but they're very tricky, they're very dangerous, and yes, you can make a lot of money quickly and you can lose all that money very quickly. And as we said, the two major categories are options contracts and futures contracts, mostly called options and futures. And folks, this is all you have to know. You see this slide, 26? All you have to know about derivatives for now is that they're risky. They are they derive their value from some other asset. And the two examples are options and futures. Stay away. Let's see. The derivative speculators did not feel so all alone in 2008. usually they're the only ones who are proud to have only lost 30%. Oh my goodness, I only lost 30% last year. Not bad. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm not a big fan. If you notice, I'm not a big fan of these things. I've never bought or sold an option. I probably never will. Maybe later on when I'm not even teaching and I have time on my hands to goof around. But don't consider it investing. If you like Vegas, if you like gambling, you probably will like options and futures. I don't like gambling. I've never put a dime in a slot machine, and I never bought a lottery ticket. So that's me. So I want to tell you where I'm coming from, you understand? Because everybody's different, and you decide. You have to decide. Okay, so what are we going to emphasize? How are we doing? Burbling on for 40 minutes. Okay. Oh, by the way, some people say, Piano, your lectures are far too long. You need to break them up into 5-10 minute things. I say, no, forget it. You know, they can always hit the pause button. They can come back to it later. They can rewind it. Again, you can do that because I have enough trouble keeping track of all the presentations I do have. Okay. Is that a deal? Thank you very much. In our class, we're going to emphasize stocks. Because stocks are where it's at. That's where the growth is. That's where the dynamism in our economy is, with the companies that are innovating and coming up with new products and new markets, and the companies that have been around for decades and are still innovating, making their operations more efficient and raising the standard of living for everybody on the planet. It sounds like an advertisement, but it is true. We're going to spend some time on bonds because bonds are important, especially as we get older. And of course, as we said, we're going to spend one presentation, boom, on short-term investments because they're important when we need the money in the short term. And then we're going to spend a couple of weeks here on mutual funds. And throughout the semester, we'll be referring back to mutual funds because, as we said, they are the investments for the masses. They are managing the money on your behalf. They're choosing the investments. And for the vast majority of us, they're very important. These are the most popular, most important financial investment options, and you will have a strong foundation in these choices. Cool? Okay, that's what we're going to do, folks. And relax, we've got another 15, 16 weeks ahead of us. And of course, if you're taking this in 8 weeks, you got to be doing it in double time. So we want you to spend at least 2 hours a day as opposed to an hour a day. Okay, so now, many people, and rightfully so, they're always worried about the exam. I don't like taking exams. I don't like giving exams, but they're part of the system. We need to show that you have learned the material and are able to demonstrate competency or competence with regard to investments. So what we do here offer to you example questions. These are the kind of questions you're going to see on the exam. Now these are not the exact same questions, but there's going to be something like this that asks you about these guys. So do study these questions, these slides. But realize that these are the types of questions you're going to see. On the exam, I'll tell you again, I don't try to trick you. I never try to, unless I say, this is a little tricky, watch this. But usually I try to throw, if you're a baseball fan, I try to throw straight down the middle of the plate. I don't want to throw you a curveball, unless I say it's a curveball. Okay, if that makes sense. If you don't like baseball, don't worry about it. But that's the idea. So what are investment companies that pool investors' money and invest in a diversified portfolio of securities? Investors get diversification and professional money management. Now at San Diego State, they have these little buttons that you press on next to your seat, and you can press A, B, C, or D. In the face-to-face class, I hand out these little A, B, C, D cards because we don't have a whole lot of money. And the students raise them up in the air. And now there's a couple of online programs that let you use your smartphone to do these. But what is it? A, B, C, or D? Common short-term securities, common stocks, bonds, or mutual funds? Right. These are mutual funds. Investment company is the legal term. Mutual fund is the popular term. You are pooling your money with other investors and you get instant diversification, and the mutual fund managers do the investing on your behalf. What are investments that represent ownership in a corporation? The investors receive dividends optionally, I should add the word optionally, and capital gains or capital losses. These are common stocks. When people use the term stocks, they are 99.99% of the time talking about common stocks, unless they say preferred. When people say stocks, they mean common stocks. And I really should add the word optionally here, because the dividends are not guaranteed, the capital gains are not guaranteed, and they could turn into capital losses. What are investments with very little risk and correspondingly very little return, often used as a place to park your money or for an emergency fund of 3 to 6 or 9 months of income? These are short-term securities. Low risk, low return. Right. Okay, and there's no way to get around this. Do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? If you want to sleep well, well, you're not going to eat well. You're not going to get a whole lot of return. But you're going to be able to sleep well because you're going to know that the bank, you know, guaranteed by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which is a insurance corporation backed by the federal government. And what are fixed income securities that represent loans to corporations, municipalities, state and local governments and agencies, and the federal government? Investors receive interest and a promise to repay the loan. These are bonds, fixed income investments, mortgages, basically, like mortgages, yeah. And now, what are securities designed to offer the stability of fixed income investments, bonds, with the opportunity for capital growth of equity investments, stocks? Examples include preferred stocks and convertible stocks, convertible bonds, preferred stocks and convertible bonds. These are hybrid securities, the best and the worst of both worlds. So you get the advantages of both and you get the disadvantages of both. So why bother? In my opinion, most people don't, most people shouldn't. But you might decide differently. And then what are speculative securities, gambling, that derive their value from an underlying asset, security or asset? These examples include options, contracts, and futures. Contracts, these are derivatives. You can make a lot of money, you can lose a lot of money. And as we said, many in the industry, myself included, do not consider these investments. They are speculations. They are gambles. Okay, so now that we know just a little bit about all the major investment alternatives, we've gone through the universe of investment alternatives, what can we reasonably expect from these investments? Well, stocks, we can reasonably expect 8, 9, 10%. They've done sometimes better. I usually say 8, 9, 10% to temper people's expectations. But some have done a whole lot better than 10%, 11, 12, 13%. But I try to keep people... If I get 8%, I'm a happy man. I'm a very happy man. What about bonds? Well, bonds are less risky, so we're going to get less return. For almost a dozen years since the Great Recession, since the global financial crisis, bonds were paying 2 to 3%, sometimes 4%. But now rates rose in 2022, and now they're paying 3, 4, 5. Some are paying more. Some are still paying less, but very few. So bonds are as the bond investors are jumping up and down. Actually, a few months ago they were. Now they've tempered a little bit their enthusiasm, but they were jumping up and down, saying bonds are back, bonds are back. I attended a presentation from a bond manager who was just, she was just giddy because she had been so sad for so long having to watch the stock market explode while the bond market was just going. So she said, yeah, bonds are back. How about short-term securities? Well, they're paying more than 1 to 3% now, 4 or 5%, but that's not going to last, I hope. It means the Federal Reserve Bank will be able to lower interest rates because the inflation will have cooled off to the point where they're saying, okay, we can bring them back to 3% or so. So that's what we're getting now, 4 or 5%. How about mutual funds? Before that, as we said, before 2022, you were getting 0.01%, 1% if you were lucky. Mutual funds, well, we don't know. It depends on whether they invest in stocks, bonds, or short-term investments. Hybrid securities, well, the returns tend to be closer to bonds than stocks. OK, Okay. They're in between bonds and stocks, so they're supposed to give you the best of both worlds, but they give you the advantages and the disadvantages. And now what about derivatives? Well, we know we're going to lose big sometimes, and we might gain big, but who knows? But who knows? So what do you think, folks? What do you think? All right, we're so excited. We're so proud of you. Okay, well, what's next? All right.